this is an awesome little piece. Or in Parakeet Zion plus a fantastic. Parakeet Zion plus Metal. It's really good. Dovin HaMelech obviously took the whatever the slingshot, slung it, it hit the Goliath in the head. Now, it could be that there was either a small part of the armor that was exposed, in which he was able to hit it directly where that where that thing was. It could be that when he told when Dovin HaMelech told him that the birds of the sky will eat your flesh, he looked up at the heavens, and in that moment there was that little space in between his stuff, whatever, and he was able to hit him right there. The other is the medrash. It's actually brought down by the tour lahalacha that the reason why we use metal knives for bris milah is because Dovin HaMelech made a deal with the metal. You open up for my stone, and the stone will give way to the metal. That no longer will we use stone knives for bris milah, but rather metal instead.
Why do you make the argument to the stone that you go through the metal and I'll give you the?
The stone doesn't have the choice to go through the metal, but the metal has the allowance to be allowed to go through. So therefore, it went through that way, and that was there. That was that. Now, why did he fall on his face? It makes sense that if he was hit like that, then he'd fall backward, right? But he fell forward instead. So either because the mouth that said blasphemy should lick the dust, or the same way that Dagon, remember Dagon, the god, fell on his face right in front of the Aron? So too, Goliath, who had a Dagon tattoo around his chest, fell straight downward like Dagon did. The third answer is to make it easier for Dovin HaMelech to cut off his head. Right? But it is a famous far side. Okay? It's a famous far side by Gary Larson back in the old 90s, where all of a sudden you see like this huge guy, like face first on the ground, like flat on the ground, and you have two Israelites talking to each other. One guy saying, "You'd think for a guy that good with a slingshot, he'd be a little bit quicker off his feet." So Ryan Dolanach. That was actually pretty funny. Anyway, it's not true, and it might be Kira, but it's funny. David HaMelech was able to overcome, become more strong than the Plishti with his slingshot in the stone. He hit the Plishti, he killed them. He didn't even have a sword in his hand. It's unbelievable. It doesn't show whether Goliath was dead yet or not. I mean, it does say Vimiseyu, right, and he killed him, right, but it seems that he then killed him. After he hit the Plishti on the ground, then he was able to kill him, and that's what ended up happening.
And Goliath is his cousin, right?
Distant. But yeah. He needed to, like, Rus and Orpah. Vayort David, Vayom and Lopishi. David ran, stood right next to the Plishti. Okay. Vayikash Vaskar Bavishal Vomitara. He took his sword, pulled it out of his sheath, Vayim Moses Seyu, and he killed him. Vayikor's boss, Roshu, he cut off his head. Vayor Plishti Kimetsky Barmi Anusu. The Plishti saw that their hero was now dead, and they immediately started fleeing. Now, here's the famous Medrash, that Goliath's metal, like all around his neck, was impossible to take off. It was a little clasp, but Dovin HaMelech didn't know where the clasp was. He wanted to cut off that of Goliath, but he had no idea what to do, so he said out loud to all the Israelis, anybody who knows how to be able to take off this metal, tell me right now, and I swear that he will marry a Jewish woman, a good Jewish woman, as a wife. Uriah Chiti, who was his sword bearer, right, of Goliath, came by and undid the clasp. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you promised a non-Jew, a Jewish woman as a wife, I swear it'll be your wife. And Uriah Chiti married Bat Sheva. And that was the girl that he ended up marrying. Crazy, isn't it?
What?
Uh-huh. Uriah Chiti did come in. That's from the Kli Yucker. That's how he brings up down. So the men of Yisrael and all of Yehuda, they started blowing on their trumpets. They chased after the Plishim all the way until Gai, to the valley, got Shari Akron. You see where they are? Look, it's right over here. They were right over here. Azeka, Sokol, right around there. Here's the Ela Valley. Here's where the Plishim were. That's where the Israelis were. They came out this way, and the Plishim fled all the way down Gas. I don't know what this is over here. I think it's just for Gaza, like the Plishim area. Okay.
They also had the wall then?
I'm sorry. Back then. B'nei Yisrael came back after pursuing the Plishtim, and they spoiled the camp. They took everything they could from the camp itself. They plundered it. Vayikach David es Rosh HaPlishtim v'yivehu Yerushalayim. Dovin HaMelech was holding on to the head of the Plishtim. It was a big head. It was a nice big head. He brought it over to Yerushalayim as Caleb Sambalo, right? And his Caleb, his equipment, he placed in his tent. Now, I don't know why he went to Yerushalayim. What was in Yerushalayim at the time? Shaul's Malchus was in Binyamin. It wasn't Yerushalayim. Nobody knew about Yerushalayim yet. So I'm not so sure what exactly that means. So it says over here, that David took Goliath's armaments and brought them to his home in Beis Lechem. Goliath's sword was deposited at Nov. And remember that, Nov Ira Kohanim. Some say that he brought everything to the tent of the Mishkan in Nov. David was always there. It was called his tent, like the shul is called his. And it was taken throughout the cities of Yerushalayim, the head of Goliath, to publicize the great miracle, and then was brought to Yerushalayim. However, he says over here, according to tradition, Yerushalayim is the site of the Mishkan, which is Nov, not Yerushalayim that we know of today. It made no sense. There was no Yerushalayim yet. It was owned by Arvana Hayavusi. It was a Jebusite city. I mean, it's not there.
Isn't there a halacha that you're not supposed to let the dead hang the day? Yeah, does that apply to
Jews?
Only to Jews.
Yeah, evil people you're allowed to. They usually didn't, by the way, even so, but yeah.
The commentators say that it eventually ended up close to Yerushalayim, but it's like... Here it says it first started and went to, and he brought the Shul.
Eventually got all there,
and
right?
And it went va'achachach sovav ima ba'ara Yisrael mishem chazrim shol ad givat shol hiro ve'vil Yerushalayim shiyav samach l'shem.
So samach l'shem, right? So that makes sense. It's just strange. The whole thing is very strange. Now look at Nunhei over here. It says b'kiros shol was David yotzei l'kras ha'plisha. When Shol saw David Melech going out to greet the plisha, this is totally out of order. I mean, this is before he fought against Goliath. Omer Avner, he turned to Avner, Sarzavot, to the general. Whose kid is this Avner? Now, he knew David HaMelech, right? That's not his question. His question was not, whose kid is he? His question is, find out about this kid. There's something wrong. As soon as he saw that his armor fit David HaMelech perfectly, even though he was about a foot and a half taller than David HaMelech, he said, something's up with this kid. Find out who this kid really is. By your life, I have absolutely no idea. The Medrash says that when Shaul HaMelech asked this to Avner, Doi Goadomi got up and said, instead of asking whether or not David HaMelech, you know, what family David HaMelech is from, why don't you ask if David HaMelech is Jewish? He said, well, David's not Jewish. Doegedomi said, he comes from Rusa Moabia. And we paskin Moabi, Moabia cannot join Klal Yisrael. Avner ben Ner got up and said to him, no, we paskin Moabi, velo Moabia. That the Moabim are not allowed to join Klal Yisrael because they didn't come up and bring us food and water when we were on our way down from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. So because they didn't do it, so therefore they're punished. But the Moabios, who were not required to go out because women stay in the tent, they were Tsenuos, so therefore they're not required to go out, so they are allowed to join Klal Yisrael, and therefore Rus was a kosher woman. Doeg Gadomi said, show me the drasha. So Avner and Doeg got into a massive fight, and Shaul HaMelech paskined like Doeg, which is why he was able to get out of giving his wife to David HaMelech. He held. He was usher to Klal Yisrael. Shaul HaMelech had paskined that it was usher to Klal Yisrael. Going against a psak made by Boaz, David HaMelech's great-grandfather, years earlier, and saying what was happening over there.
Well, but Boaz had a somewhat biased, didn't he have a biased position when he, I mean, being that he did marry Ruth?
Who? I'm sorry? Boaz? Boaz was paskening for Ploni Almoni, who was supposed to marry Ruth. When Ploni Almoni said no at the end of the day, that's when Boaz married Ruth. But he had paskened already. That's why it says he took 10 men, Ziknei Al'ir. He brought Zikanim to pasken the halacha. They paskened for Ploni Almoni that you can marry Ruth. And when Ploni Almoni said no, then he said, then I'm marrying Ruth. That's what ended up happening over here.
Wait, you're saying, I don't understand. So why are they having this conversation again? If that's what the halacha is, that's what the halacha is.
That was the psak at the time. Doeg Gadomi came along and said, no, I'm telling you,
but
this is not this
doesn't work. It with somebody from back then.
So at that point, the Talmud relates, Amasa. Remember Amasa? Amasa is the brother of Avner. He announced that he had learned in Shmuel's Academy, as a tradition passed down, that this prohibition applied exclusively to men and not to women. And he was one of the links of the Mesorah, Shmuel and Avi, and therefore they took his testimony as accepted as the final authority. Nonetheless, Doeg Gadomi would not agree to it, and Shaul HaMelech was worried about it, and therefore didn't want to worry about it, didn't want to give over his wife. Go find out who exactly this young man is. In other words, go to the academies, go to all the Basim Midrashos, and find out what is the halacha in such a case. Does everybody know what Amasa knows, or does anybody paskin differently? Find out what the halacha is when it comes to Moavi, below Moavia. When David HaMelech returned from killing the police, he took him, he brought him in front of Shaul. The other is holding the head of the Goliath in his hands. My Yomari loves Shaul. Then Miatonar, whose son are you, my lad? My Yomari David ben Abdukha Yishai Beis Alachmi. He said, the son of your servant, Yishai of Beis Alachmi.
But he already knows that.
I'm sorry?
He already knows that.
David Melech understood that there was a lot going on, but he thought that maybe the reason why he was doing such a thing was because Saul's daughter, right, was supposed to marry him. So he said, all right, what do I do in this situation? Nonetheless, David realized that he was envious of him. And as soon as he saw that envy, he being very careful that even his father, who was an illustrious person with 600,000 Talmidim, who was a person who had never sinned once in his life, was still called Abdecha. It's your servant, Shaul HaMelech. You should understand that. And that's what he told him. He didn't want anything to happen because of his jealousy. When he finished speaking to Shaul, Yonasan's soul was connected to David's soul, and he loved him as he loved his own self. Now, number one, David HaMelech and Yonasan were very similar in nature. Remember, Yonasan went out by himself to go fight a war. So David HaMelech was willing to go out by himself to go fight a war. He was willing to do such a thing, right? And he was willing to go do that. That's number one. Number two, David HaMelech had a tremendous kedusha to him that Yonasan had never seen before, had never felt before. He was around Avner, he was around David HaMelech, he was around Avner, he was around Doeg Gadol, he was around all these people. But he didn't realize how special David HaMelech was until he was around him. That's number two. Number three, he saw that there was something in his humility, that David HaMelech was so humble that he was willing to say that after he had just killed Goliath, something that no one else was willing to do. Nonetheless, he said, I'm the son of your servant, and things like that. When Yonasan saw that, he said, this guy is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And he said, what?
I'm the greatest man in the world.
I was just like, you know, I'm the son of Yishai. But to add on the word Avdecha is a big thing in and of itself. That's that in itself. So granted, you didn't have to have gaiva, but you didn't have to be so humble either.
You know, if you think about it, Yonasan's actually, in a way, more I want to say more unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you think that he's the son of Saul, the king. A crazy general. And if anything, like, there's always a competition. A son always wants to usurp his father, right?
And that gets literally into the next line that the Miyamali says. Yonasan sensed about him an air of royalty. He understood that there was something about David HaMelech that was not like anybody else out there. He knew it. He saw it. He couldn't believe it. And he understood that there's something special about David that nobody else saw. Yonasan was connected. There's something there, Yonasan said. I need to be around this guy. Shaul took him on that day, would not let him return to his father's house for two reasons. Number one, because he needed him. Remember, he's still playing music for him. Whenever Shaul went a little crazy, David HaMelech would play the music and he would feel a little bit better. Number two, he wanted to keep his enemy closer at hand, right? You keep your friends close and your enemies closer. He wanted to keep him as far as he could. He did not want him to return to his father's house to see what would happen with his kingship. They made a bris together. They made a covenant together that they would help each other out whenever they could. Yonasan took off his kingly clothing, took off his kingly purple cloak. He gave him his cloak and his sword and his bow and his chagor, his belt, and everything that he had. He wanted to give him everything as a sign of honor to show him that he would accept and work under David's authority. Remember, Yonasan was no slouch. He started a war and won it by himself. He was like a nobody. He was a guy who was willing to fight and was willing to do tremendous things, and nonetheless he went under David HaMelech. Yeah.
Because he's technically the prince, so to speak. He's next in line for the throne.
That's what David was saying before. Yeah, 100%. Even though he was the prince and waiting to go, he knew that David HaMelech was special. David HaMelech did whatever Shaul HaMelech told him to do. And he became wise. He became successful in everything. Now, Shaul had another plan now. He put him in charge of the people of war. And then he became good in the eyes of the people and the eyes of his servant Shaul. Now, the plan was, put him in the army. He's never going to be this successful this long. He's going to have a price on his head because he killed Goliath, the king of the Philistines. Everybody's going to try to get him. So he figured, I'll put him out to war. He'll be killed. He'll be killed in the middle of war. But the opposite happened. David HaMelech became so successful so quickly and was killing so many people all at once, and he was never, ever maimed, never hurt, nothing ever happened to him. People started to love the guy more than they had loved him beforehand. When they came after, they returned after David HaMelech had killed the Philistine, they came out, the women in all the cities of Israel, to sing. They had dances to greet Shaul HaMelech, the tupim, with drums, the simcha, the shalishim, with simcha and with cymbals as well. They had praise, and they wanted to say, their line, says the Gemara, was that, well, as we'll say, Vatanena Anasha Mesachatos Vatomarna, they said out loud, Hika Shol Balapav, Shol killed thousands, David Beruvavosav, David tens of thousands. Now, there was no disrespect in what they were trying to say. What they were trying to say is that Shol HaMelech is in charge, and his generals are killing so many. Even Shol himself went out to war and killed 1,000, while his general, who was in charge of many people, was able to kill 10,000. That's the line, that it wasn't just David killing, but David was under Shol. If they wanted to really embarrass him, they would have said David killed 10,000 and Shol only killed 1,000. They didn't mean to say that. But Shol hit two things over here. Number one, he was unbelievably jealous. So everything they said about David and Melech, immediately Shol got upset about. Anything they said. So even though it was really on him, it was really words of praise for Shol, not for David and Melech. It was really for him. No, he couldn't take that. Number one. Number two, he noticed something about the song. Do you notice anything about the song? In Pasuk Zion? Hika Shol Ba'alapav the David Berivavosav. He didn't say the word HaMelech.
It's for Shol.
They equated Shol's honor to David's honor in the Pasuk, which meant that Shol and Melech said, they're already downgrading me to the level of David and Melech, which immediately got him going, and he could not stand it. He absolutely could not stand it.
Was not David already anointed at this point?
He was already anointed, but Shol and the people didn't know about this yet. The only people that knew were Yishai and his sons, if they even knew. It says, Vayichal Shol Ma'od, Shol got very angry. I'm sorry?
And Shmuel.
Oh, Shmuel, obviously.
Yeah. Was there a coin? There must have been a coin involved.
No. No need. Just the Navi. Vayera Behina Badabra Zay was very bad in his eyes. They have a nussle of David Rebubbles, Lina, so I love him. They gave him 10,000, they gave me 1,000. The only thing he's missing is the kingdom. Vayishol, what's the word, guys, in Kazakhs? I don't have the word.
Ovein.
Ovein. Yes. David, may I yoma uvahala. At that point, he hated David from that day on, and that's bad. Now, the truth is that the honest truth is that he already was a king. I mean, all he needs is the kingdom. He had the kingdom. That was the sad part. The sad part is that he was a person who was already worthy. Now listen to this. Rabbi Yeshua ben Prakhya taught, at first, anyone who told me that I should become a Rav, I would have forced him into a lion's den. Tell me that I should be a Rav? How dare he say such a thing about me? I would force him into a lion's den for saying such a thing. But now that I'm already a Rav, should anyone tell me to abdicate my position of prominence? Don't be a Rav anymore, I would pour a kettle of hot water all over him.
What?
Not so bad. Not so bad. But I'll pour water over him and say, Chas v'shalom, how can you say that I shouldn't be a Rav anymore? It's true, by the way. Somebody would tell me. I hear the time. Somebody told me beforehand. I don't know if I necessarily want to be this and still be yeshiva and something like that. But now that I have it, somebody tries to take it away from me. I would be like, what's wrong with you?
It's an automatic reaction. Is that good or is that gaiva? Not you. I'm just trying to
know. Yeah, me for sure it is. I don't know about it. But it is. It's gaiva. Once you get into the position, Shlomo HaMelech was the most humble of all individuals. We've said that many, many times before. But once he got the position, he didn't want it out.
Somebody said to Yeshua and Prophet, you shouldn't be a Rav anymore, you shouldn't be a Rebbe anymore. And so the point is, would she be like, I mean, if he was real Anav, would she be like,
real
Anav, right,
like,
now,
yeah.
I'm out.
No, he should say, not I'm out, but he should say, like, you're right, I don't deserve it. I don't know why I'm in this position. But instead, he fights for his position and says, no, here's why I should be in my position. That's what Yeshua and Prophet was trying to say. What? I think so, for sure. You're right. It's different when you get a position of prominence. It's different. I can tell you from my experience. And great, okay, that's not a Talmud Chacham. But if you would have somebody who's a Talmud Chacham and you say he's a Rav of a Shul, a Rabbi Thurst or a Rabbi Zev Kohn, or somebody who's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, you say to him, you know what? I don't think you deserve your position. He might say, you're right, I don't deserve my position. He might say it. The truth is that in his mind, in his heart, he's thinking to himself, who are you?
We're arguing it's appropriate.
No. Not appropriate. We know it's not appropriate. We're talking about reality. The reality is that's what they say. The reality is that's how you think.
Who cares?
Hey, listen, once you conquer Kaiva, then you get Kass.
That is true. That is true.
So that's how you started messing with it. You start getting angry.
I went up to like, you don't really deserve it. He could be absolutely right.
Well, I agree. We're just talking reality. Somebody tells them to take away their position, they won't do it.
Remember, he's talking about. Remember, Shimon Brachia was the top at the time. Shimon and Beshetach had said it to him. I wonder what would have happened.
Remember, Shimon Brachia was kicked out. Okay, there's a lot to talk about.
I was going to say. Are we talking about people beneath you, theoretically in Torah or in Midos, or people are above you?
Beneath you, anybody?
Oh, so then you are allowed to fight them if they're beneath you. Who are they?
Again, regardless.
Okay, Gaivo.
Regardless, there definitely is guys involved here.
There was someone who was like very high ranking, and someone called him by his last name. He never angry.
He might not have been a humble guy to begin with.
No, but he was there, but I knew him.
No, we know it. But you mean Macharos? The next day, Pasuk Yud, but Titzach Ruach Elokim Rol Shol. Immediately, Shol started getting that evil spirit again. But he's not baby still Chabayis. He started raving in the midst of the house. Started saying crazy things. Not prophesying as in Nevuah. Started saying crazy things. The Dovid Menachem Biyado, Dovid started playing his harp. Kiyom Biyom, like he normally did. The Chanis Biyad Shol. Shol is walking around with a spear in his hand. And that was normal. He wasn't holding the spear. He would always hold the spear in his hand. It was almost like a walking stick for him. He would do that. And the idea is that he literally was speaking foolish words. This evil spirit came upon him. It literally made him crazy. Crazy. And that's how upset he was. Bayatol Shol is a Chanis. Shol raised up the spear. By Yomer, Akeb David, I'm going to kill David Ubakir, and it's going to hit the wall. Twice, David Melch was able to elude him. It could be that David Melch didn't even notice what he was trying to do. That Shol HaMelech, while he's playing, was so into his music that Shol HaMelech took the spear, started spearing him once, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made David sort of just turn out of the way just at that moment. Shol's like, what the heck? Took the spear again, right, tried to hit him a second time, and just at that moment, David HaMelech turned around the other way. Twice, he was able to elude Shol HaMelech, but he didn't run away. He might not have even known that it actually happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just made sure that it wouldn't happen, which allowed Shol HaMelech to get even more upset that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was on the side of David HaMelech here. But you were Shol HaMelech made David, now Shol became very afraid of David. Okay, Hashem Imo, whom he Shol saw. God was with him, and he turned away from Shol. But he said, real Shol Meimo, so Shol turned from him forever. But he said, Meolo Sar Eleth, and made him into a general instead of playing music by him. By Yetziv Yavolik Naam, and he went out in front of the people, and now this is another. Send him out to battle and have him be killed, like we mentioned before. But everything David did was with great wisdom, and Hashem was with him. Shol saw how successful he was, and he became again very, very afraid of him. All Shol and Yehuda loved David HaMelech. He went everywhere. He was all the way. He was among the people. Now that he's a general, he's going out, and everybody knew who he was. Everybody started going. Even the tribe of Binyamin, who was working for Shol HaMelech, even they loved David HaMelech. Here's my daughter, my oldest daughter, Merav. I'm going to give her to you as a wife. Remember, he had promised David for killing Goliath, you're going to marry my wife. Right? You're going to marry my wife. My daughter. Right? I'm giving her to you as a wife. But only on condition that you're a soldier for me. You should fight the wars of God. I won't kill him, maybe, but the Pleshtim will be able to kill him. He said, let the Pleshtim kill him. That was the idea. So he added on a condition to what he had said before.
Can you do that? No. You already made a deal.
Absolutely not.
I have a question. Why do we name our children Shol?
Shol HaMelech? He's one of the greatest tzaddikim of all time.
But this
story is what happens to a person who has kinah. And the kinah was still, it was L'shem Shamayim, was to be the Melech over Yisrael, but this is what happens to a person who has kinah. Nonetheless, Shol was
every great person in Tanakh has their flaws. I mean, every.
Except for Yishai, Amram, Kilov, and Binyamin Esau. Binyamin Esau.
Maybe.
By the way, Hanoch is the most used name in all of the Torah. It's used four different times. What? Hanoch, the original, right? The one from the father of Mr. Shoah. It's Hanoch of Esau. There's a Hanoch of Cain and a Hanoch of Yishmael. There's a fifth time. Hanoch of Reuben. Forgot about that Hanoch. It's five times. Okay, but Yom David Oshol, Mi Anochi, Mi Chayai. It's not the same guy. Mishpachas Aviv Yisrael, Ki Yachasim LaMelech. Said David HaMelech to Shol, who am I that I should be? What is my wife? Right? There's my father's family. Obviously, my father is a very chush of a guy. Right? But that I should be a son-in-law of the king? David HaMelech sort of rejected the idea that I'm going to be part of the king. He said, listen, I understand, Shol HaMelech, that you want to promise me your daughter. I understand that, but who am I to be able to do that? What he really was attempting to, and here is the remez. The remez is that who am I and what is my life? Is that I shouldn't be alive. We all know that David HaMelech was supposed to die at the age of 3 months. And so who gave him life?
Adam Rishon.
Adam Rishon gave him 70 years of his life. And David HaMelech was able to live to 70. We talked about that today in Kovitz Mamar. 70 years of his life. Some say he took years from Abraham and from Yaakov Avinu. And Yaakov and Yosef, I'm sorry. Yaakov and Yosef. Yaakov lived to 147. He's supposed to live to 180. That's 33 years right there. Yosef Atai was supposed to live to 147, like his father Yaakov. He lived to 110. That's 37. 37 plus 33 is 70. And those are the 70 years altogether that was going to be to him. So he said, my years aren't even my own. How questioned could I possibly be? I was given life from other people. I wasn't given my own life.
Well, he knew that. That was Masorah back then.
No, this is a remez with what he was saying. Chazal hints to the fact that he wasn't supposed to live from this pasuk. This is where it all comes from. That whole medrash of Adam Rishon giving up 70 years is not from there. It's from here. It's from there where he says, Mi Anokhi O Mi Chayai. Is literally, that's where the pasuk, that's where we darshan it all out from. It comes from the Zohar. Yeah.
David Malach is David Malach. Why was he supposed to have three? How can he be David Malach for David three?
Good question. It's a good question.
You
test. But even eight cases, Meir Abbas Shaul
David. Yeah, everything about the line of Mashiach all the way up comes through a roundabout way.
Yeah, but that's not the answer.
No,
I hear what you're saying, but that's not the answer.
Okay.
It is a really good answer. It is a good answer, but not for this particular question. It's a good question. It's a good question. But even eight case is Meir Abbas Shaul. At the time when you're supposed to get Meir Abbas Shaul David, when David and Melech and Meir are supposed to get married, can you imagine this? It's your wedding day. You're getting all dressed up. You're putting on that bow tie. You're putting on the little jacket. You're getting all there. Is that happening? He nitna la Adriel hamakolasi leisha. She was given over to Adriel the makolasi as a wife. Someone came up to the chuppah, and all of a sudden Shaul said, "I'm really sorry, dude. She already married Adriel. It's over." Unbelievable, isn't it? Adriel, by the way, it could be that Merav never loved David HaMelech, and that Merav accepted her own kiddushin from Adriel without telling her father. It could be that happened, that it wasn't Shaul HaMelech's fault. And this one, it seems likely that it was Shaul HaMelech's fault because he hated David HaMelech so much. But it could be that Merav did it on her own. But how? Michal bas Shaul as David, but Michal loved David HaMelech. The other daughter of Shaul loved David. They had given her to Shaul, but Yishar HaGavar Ve'Eino. They told it over to Shaul, and he was okay with that. That's okay. Now there's a big machlokas. If David HaMelech and Merav were ever engaged to one another, was there ever a kiddushin between the two? If there was a kiddushin between Merav and David, he could not marry Michal, because even just having a kiddushin with Merav means he cannot marry Michal until Merav is dead. Some say Merav died, and therefore he was able to marry Michal. That's one opinion.
But did she be over on Ish Zish?
Who would be over?
Merav.
Merav died.
No, I'm saying, if you're saying that Merav...
Oh, no, and they had to get a divorce. There had to be a gerushin of some sort. You're right. But there had to be a gerushin of some sort. But if you say that it didn't happen, that that wasn't what happened, then in the end, David HaMelech was able to marry Michal, right, completely, because the whole kiddushin was invalid from the start.
Even though Shaul promised one of his daughters, he can't force one of his daughters to marry somebody, right? Isn't that a lacha?
You are allowed. I mean, it depends on how old they were, but if she was a Nara, then she could.
So if she's over 12,
if she's over 12, she's a vulgaris. She's got 12 and a half. But she was probably a Nara. We'll assume that it was a Nara over here. Yeah, that is
less than 12?
That's when they got married back then. That's when they got married. That was all. I mean, that's what people did. I can't fully explain it, but
there was no Kiddushin.
There was no Kiddushin. Okay, so if we've shown him that probably go both ways on this, and that's fine. It could be, by the way, that Shaul Melech had never even said that whoever beats Goliath then will marry my daughter. That was the line. That was like the rumor. But nobody had ever substantiated it. So when they went up to Shaul and said, "All right, do you want to give your daughter over to David?" Shaul's like, "What are you talking about?" The second time he said something. Okay, the second time he said something. But even then, it might not have been exactly. It's all good. But anyway, Shaul was then alone. Shaul said to himself, "You know what? I'll give him Michal. Usilo Lamokish. She'll trap him. Usibo Yad Plishim, and then the Plishim will be able to get him." In other words, Michal will be on my side, he thinks, and then Michal will be able to get everything from David HaMelech, send him out to war, and he'll die in the hands of the Plishim. He said, "Okay, I have a second way for you to get married to me today. Instead of getting married to Merav, you can get married to Michal." But now he's got a great plan. Tell David Balot quietly. Lamor saying, "The king does still want you. The whole above the Vaibuchan and all his servants love you. You should be the son in law of the king. David HaMelech refused. David HaMelech said, no, look, if it didn't work out with Merab, I'm good. Okay, I'll marry somebody else, I'll be fine. I don't need to marry your daughter. Okay, so he just said, I'll be done. 29. So it says, Vaidabu Abdi Shol Ba'ozni David. So the servants of Shol spoke in the ears of David as Hatzbarim Ba'ila all these words. He said to them, you know, they're all trying to convince him to go ahead and do it. He sits there and he's like, oh, wait a second. Is it so small to be a son-in-law of a king? We're in Yurkas Chav Gimel. He said, is it so small to be the son-in-law of a king? Like, you guys are trying to convince me to be the son-in-law of a king. It takes a lot to be the son-in-law of a king. I'm a small, nothing. I'm an individual. Well, what do I deserve to be able to be that way? I mean, how could that be? Some say it was a subtle complaint. Shaul Melech promised me riches for killing Goliath, and I never got it. I'm still poor. I haven't even gotten that. Why do I want to be the son of all the king?
What is so questionable about being the son of all the king? You didn't do anything because of your sister.
The prince in waiting. You're the prince in waiting. You are the next king if that daughter ends up becoming queen. You are the what is it? What is it called? If there's
you're
a queen,
you're close to the boss, man.
The husband of Queen Elizabeth is called what?
A lucky guy.
Very, very wealthy.
Happened to be related, so therefore.
No, there's a, I mean, yes, you're right, but no, not everybody was picked for that. Right, but not everybody's picked for that. Someone was picked for
that. She's the queen and he's
the king elect, the king.
In waiting? No.
I don't know what it is. Alright, Vayigidu Avdei Shaul Lo. The Avdei Shaul said to him, Lamo, saying, Hadvarim Ha'ila Dibur David. Right? This is what David HaMelech said. David HaMelech said, listen, I don't know if I really want to be the king. Vayomer Shaul Kozom Ha'ila David, this is what you say to David. Ain't Kevitz HaMelech the more. He said, I don't want a dowry. He said to David HaMelech, listen, I don't need a dowry from you. Kim the Mea Orlos Plesham, we nothing but Oyvah HaMelech. Just bring me 100 Orlos of the Plesham. In other words, kill 100 Plesham, cut off their bris milas, and bring those to me, and then we'll take revenge against the enemies of the king. His plan was to allow him to die in the hands of the police. Now, what was the idea? Stand like this.
When David was with Shem Shemayim,
then he's able to defeat Goliath. He's with Shem Shemayim. He went out there and he said, I'm going to fight for the rights of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then he wins the war. But here, he's not with Shem Shemayim. He's doing it in order to marry Micha. Now he might die in the hands of the police. And that was his plan now. The servants told David these words. David said, okay, if that's what he wants, then I'll do that. At least to be the son-in-law of the king below Malu Ayamim. It wasn't very many days. David, he got up. Him and his men went. He killed 200 men. Now 100. 200 men. David is Orlo Sam. He brought over all their Orlos. And he filled up a pit of them in front of the king. Just as
disgusting.
The police were always known as Arelim, because it was a term that was, you know, like you're a lowly type person. So to represent that, I guess he wanted the Orlos. That's what he did with Goliath, right? But here, this is to show them. Imam Melech was Chatan Melech to be the son of the king. And Michal was given to him as a wife. Now that's going to be it, meaning he added on something. Now there is a machlokas, what kind of a kedushin that was. Some say he was a real kedushin. He was Mekadisher with the value of that skin of the Orlos. And it was a Shava Pruta, right? Because that in the end could be used as dog food or something like that. So in theory, it does have a value and you can go ahead and do it. That should be perfectly fine. Others say it might have been a halva, that it was a loan. David HaMelech was loaning the Orlos, so to speak, or he was being borrowed, so to speak, to kill the Plishtim, and therefore it's not a good kedushin. The question is also Malvo Pruta, Daita Pruta or Daita Malva. There's a lot of kashas that deal with David HaMelech and whether or not this is a real kedushin. At the end of the day, David HaMelech Paskin was a kedushin. Shaul HaMelech Paskin wasn't a kedushin. Now, Vayar Shaul Vayeda Ki Hashem Im David. Shaul saw and he knew that Hashem was with David and now he realized that his daughter Michal loved David.
They already said that.
Now, we knew that from outside. Now Shaul realized it. At first he thought Michal was going to be on his side. It's my youngest daughter. She's on my side. She's daddy's little girl. Now he realized, oh no, she loves him also. also. So like Yosef Shaul wrote, Leiro Mipnei David. Shaul became very afraid again because of David. Oh, even more so. Shaul Oyed as David Kol Yomim. He was now an enemy of Shaul forever, and now he started to be open about it and telling people about it. Pasuk Lamed, Bayitu Sori Plishim. The officers of the Plishim went out, Vimidei Tseisim. Every time they went out, Sochal Dov Mikol Abdei Shaul. He was more wise than all the servants of Shaul by Yikar Shmo Ma'od, and he became very, very coveted. You know why they came out now, the Plishim? Why would he fight? You were just decimated by David Melech time and time again. You're going to go out and fight now? They thought that David Melech had just gotten married. And the law of the Jews is that the first year you get married, you don't go out to war. So David Melech won't be able to fight. So they immediately started fighting. As soon as they heard that David Melech got married, their spies told them that David Melech got married, they immediately went out to go fight because David Melech wouldn't be able to be there. But David Melech held, this wasn't a Melchames Rishus, it was a Melchames Mitzvah. And if it's a Melchames Mitzvah to get rid of the Plishtim, he could still fight. He went out to war. Melchames Rishus is a Melchama in which you're trying to expand the land and make more than what just what we have in Eretz Yisrael. Melchames Mitzvah is when somebody's fighting and you're trying to defend the land. That is not a Mitzvah. Only the original one when they go in.
Isn't Melchames Mitzvah from Yoshua's time about clearing out the land?
That for sure was a Mitzvah. That was a Mitzvah straight from HaKadosh Baruch
Hu.
It's true, but it's that's over now. That's over. No, for sure not now. But there was Melchames Mitzvah fighting the police. The police can come to fight you. That's Melchames Mitzvah. What are you going to say there?
Well, yeah, they're in the tomb, so he could have always consulted that anyways.
I don't know if David Melech, as of right now, David Melech has not used the Urim and Tumim. He hasn't used it once. So, well, or at least we haven't seen it. So it could be. Remember, you can't just stop use the Urim and Tumim. To use the Urim and Tumim, he has to be Sanhedrin, the king of Klal Yisrael, which he wasn't yet publicized about it.
Yeah, but he was.
Or, I should say, if everybody needs it, meaning the whole Rabin, Sorche Rabin, he could have it. So, in that sense, he might not have gone to the Urim and Tumim because he didn't want to publicize that he was king.
Yeah, but this
and
is not a big Rabin.
Maybe. He wasn't the Tzorcha Rabbim. The other people could fight. He wasn't necessarily the Tzorcha Rabbim. Should I go fight is an individual kash, which you cannot ask of the Urim and Tumim. He says something about the Urim and Tumim. Okay. So let's go. You test Aleph. Okay, we got a couple things to read. Dabar Sholi,
Yom Sabbath. Someone else could have taken his place,
right? That's the reason why it wasn't an individual question, not a public question.
So therefore, it's not Tzorcha Rabbim.
That's correct. Wait, Dabar Sholi, Yonas and Mano. Shol spoke to Yonas and his son. Wait, you're saying so it's not a mitzvah at all?
Was it a mitzvah?
No, it's still Mohammed's mitzvah.
I have a question.
Nonetheless, you're right. That's still called a Mohammed's mitzvah. Yeah. And a Mohammed's mitzvah, everyone has
to
fight.
What's the avera?
What's the avera?
You can't do it. Your first year of marriage.
But that's only by a Mohammed's rishus. By a Mohammed's mitzvah, that doesn't apply. So it's not an avera. It would only be an avera if it was a Mohammed's
mitzvah. Not a Mohammed's mitzvah because someone else could take it.
No. Mohammed's mitzvah, everyone fights. Everyone fights. It doesn't matter if someone can take your place. Everyone fights. Even if it's a chosin, bimei chupa. Under his chuppah, everyone fights. So let's go. Gaber Shol and Yonas and Beno. Shol spoke to Yonas and his son. That's Kol Avad. El Kol Avad. In the beginning of Parkia Tetz. Lahamis is David. He wanted to kill David Amelch. Yonas and Ben Shol chafetz b'David Amelch. But Yonas and Ben Shol, he loved him completely. Now, up until now, he's been very quiet about his elimination and trying to get rid of David Amelch and what he was going to do. Now, he spoke bad words of David Amelch and encouraged everybody there that anything you could do to bring about his death, go ahead and do it. Now, Shol knew that his daughter and his son both loved David Amelch. He knew that completely. So he didn't try convincing them whatsoever. But he allowed Yonasan to overhear him, to hear how much he hated him, then maybe something would enter into Yonatan's mind, so Yonatan would start thinking about jealousy, or start thinking about bad things about David Melech, but nonetheless, Yonatan did not get moved whatsoever. He remained the same person that he was without any question whatsoever. By the way, every time that we see Yonatan, his name was without a hey up until now. From now on, there is an extra hey, a name, a letter of God's name, as in Yehonasan Yud Hey Vav. The reason why is because he was so with David Melech, he was willing to give up every to be with David HaMelech, that shows his kedusha, the holiness that Yonatan had, that he was not doing it for his own sake, he was doing it for the sake of God. They had Yonatan with David Lamor. Yonatan told David HaMelech, saying, "Nevakeh Shol Avi Lanisecha, my father Shol wants to kill you. Na'atah Yishamen Avavo, can be very careful in the morning, be a shaka b'seis v'nachbeisa. Go into a secret place, and then you should run away." So number one, Yonatan is going around and he's got two things. Number one, he has Kibbutz the aim to worry about. But number two, he has to worry about somebody being killed. He didn't want to diminish his father's honor, so he didn't want want to fight his father or fight on David HaMelech's side. Nonetheless, he didn't want David HaMelech to die. So he wanted to tell David HaMelech what was happening to make sure that nothing's going to happen. Okay, the servant did not go up to David HaMelech. The servant did not say anything whatsoever, and that's the idea. Notice something as well, by the way. Over here, by Agid Yonason, it says, Mevakesh Shaul Avi Lahamisecha. We see that you're allowed to say your father's name, not in his presence, if you want to be clear about what you're trying to say. In order to be clear and can say exactly what you mean, you're allowed to mention a specific name of your parents. That's when you're allowed to. Otherwise, you would not be able to do it. That is going to be awesome. Now, it says, I'm going to go out, I'm going to stand by my father in the field of Sherat Hashem, where you are there. You're going to hide there. I'm going to speak there about you with the king. I'll see what's happening, and then I'm going to tell you what's going to be. That way, David will be able to hear everything, and everything's going to be okay. Now, that's the way to talk about secretive matters. We learn that in parts of Yetzer, where Yaakov tells Rachel, let's go out to the fields to go talk about what we're going to do about leaving Lava. By David Yonasan and David Tovol Shol Avid. Yonasan spoke well about David and Melech to Shol. His father, Yonasan, Lava, yes, Abdul B'David. You shouldn't be upset about your servant, David. He's never sinned against you. He's done great things for you, and he's always been a good person. Everything he's done has been good.
Don't mention
right?
The fact that he's a son-in-law also.
Exactly. I mean, aside from all that and everything like that, he just tries to convince him he's a trustworthy servant. He's somebody that you know, that has done good things for you. I mean, come on. Who else has gotten rid of your evil spirit? Every time you need somebody, you have him play the harp for you. He put himself, his life in his own hands. He killed Goliath. There was a massive salvation for all Bnei Yisrael. You saw it. But Tismach, and you were happy. Why are you trying to kill innocent blood? To kill David for no reason whatsoever. That's the idea. He was trying to tell him, remember when I was the great salvation for Bnei Yisrael all the way back when I took from, I went up the army and I started, and I was supposed to die? And we said, a great shua happened to Jonas, and how could we kill him on this day? So too over here with David. You can't want to kill David on a day on something like this, where such a great thing happened to him. Yishma Shaul b'kol Yonason. Shaul heard the voice of Yonason, and it made sense to him. Yishavah Shaul Chai Hashem Yimimimas. Chai Hashem, he will not be put to death. He took an oath. He took a shua because he recognized that he was very, very weak right now. And he knew that it's possible for him to get over it. So he took a shua, and he said, I'm going to make sure that it won't happen. Yonason called out to David. And he told him all these things. And Yonason brought David to Shaul. And everything was good as it was once before him. Now, technically, it was not as great as it possibly could be. Shaul was still holding a spear every time that David Melech was playing on the harp. Nonetheless, if David Melech realized, something will be okay. Okay, here we go. Batosav and Mocham Elios. The war happened again. David Melech went out and waged war with the police. And he hit a huge makkah. Right? And everybody was running away from him. Nonetheless, even though Shaul HaMelech was trying to kill David HaMelech, the Plishtim were fighting every day. And David HaMelech was sent out to the battle to be able to go on one after the other. This time, they were humiliated. The last time they had fought, what did David HaMelech do? He cut up 200 soldiers' foreskins and gave them over to Shaul HaMelech. That was an embarrassment. They went out to take revenge against David HaMelech, and yet, once again, David HaMelech was able to defeat them completely. Tirach Hashem Ra'al Shaul. Shaul kept getting angrier and angrier with all this evil spirit. He sat in his house with his spear in his hands, with David Menachem Yad, while David played with his hands. It makes no sense. Shaul Melech should have been happy with everything that David Melech was doing, but just the opposite happened time after time again. Here's this. Last time we mentioned that David Melech was playing the harp. He was playing with his lathe. This time it says he was playing with his hands. No longer was he completely paying attention to what he was doing. He wasn't paying complete attention to the music he was playing. Now he's keeping an eye out on Shaul Melech, and he's looking at Shaul because of the drastic mood swing that we have. The line over here? Of which? No. I have the Me'am Lo'ei written down. I've gone through it before. I read this before we go through it. So the Me'am Lo'ei says that right beforehand. Shaul wanted to kill with the spear to David, who got here and hit the wall as well. The Yifdar, Mipnei Shaul, but he was able to get away from Shaul this time. It wasn't that I cut his bar put him out of the way. This time he ducked. He got out of the way every time Shaul tried throwing his spear at him. By Yachas the Chanis, but here, the spear hit hit the wall. The David does. This time, David ran away. By Malit Malailahu. He ran away on that night. He knew that Shaul HaMelech was ready to kill him. And even though he was able to get it at the very last moment, he was able to go away, he knew that he had to get out. By Yishlach Shaul HaMelech Obeis David, he sent messengers to the house of David Lashamro to watch over him. Ulam Miso Baboker, and to kill him in the morning. Batagin Ludavid Michal Yishko. It was told over by Michal, his wife, Lamor, in Inkham Amalit is Nashua Laila Mokorat Tamumos. If you don't escape tonight, David, there are people outside. Tomorrow you're going to die. So Michal told that to David HaMelech, right? The messengers were only there to try to reconcile with David, to pretend, like, oh, just come back with us, everything will be okay. But the truth is, right, that he was going to kill him. They were standing over the house to prevent him from leaving at any point. And then the next morning, there were other messengers that were going to have him killed, or these guys were going to go ahead and kill David HaMelech. Nonetheless, right, this is a little crazy, but Michal was able to save him. Torah Michal is David Barak alone. Michal led David outside by the window. He went, ran away, and was able to escape. Michal was able to figure it out. He went, took small steps. That's what it means by Yelech. He went swiftly, he went very slowly so that nobody would notice that he was running. Then when he got far enough away, he ran away and kept running until he had finally been able to escape. Now, some say that this was Shabbos, which means that if it's Shabbos, even though you're not allowed to run outside the city 2,000 amos, he felt that his life was in danger, and therefore he was allowed to go out on Shabbos, which makes it unbelievable. That means Shaul HaMelech was going to kill him on Shabbos. It makes it even more unbelievable what Shaul HaMelech was willing to do in order to make sure that David HaMelech wasn't going to be out there.
So, you can't kill anyone anyway on Shabbos.
You're right, but the king is allowed to do whatever he wants. He should die. He's allowed to do it. If he perceives him as a threat to his throne, he is allowed to do that. It's part of the problem of having a king. A king can do that. But on Shabbos, it's a lot worse. Betikach Michal is a truck. Michal took.
Did he say what he betrayed?
Oh, Shabbos. Who do you trip?
No.
It's not a thing. The king is allowed to kill anyone. It's not a fate. It's not a fate. That is 100% what he's allowed to do. Now, there were statues in the house. I guess you can call them more like models. I don't know why they had these things. They're obviously not a Vodazar. Decorative statues. It's strange because you'd think that would be sort of a Vodazar, enough so that David wouldn't have them in his house. But she took these trophim, Matos Malamita, and she put them to bed. It was like a mannequin. A mannequin that she found, and she put it in the bed. She put a goat skin around the head so it looked like David HaMelech's hair. But she covered it up with a gunk so it would make it seem as if David HaMelech was sleeping, right? And that's the idea behind it. Now, I don't know exactly why that would look like David HaMelech's hair. Remember, David HaMelech was very red haired. So I don't know, maybe the shot is that somehow the skin was supposed to be really, really red. Maybe it was something like that. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. Some suggest that the truffin that Michal made was a replica of the complete human form, head included. She had made it in David's image to remind her of him while he was away, because he was away quite a bit fighting the war. And now she used it to save his life. I don't even know what that is. The obvious question is, how could David HaMelech allow Michal to have these statues? Isn't this forbidden by the Torah? There's a bunch of answers. Okay, number one, truffin is only Aser Midrabanan, meaning having a statue of something in the house is not really Avodah Zarah unless you bow down to it. So since it's only Aser Midrabanan to have statues in the house, right, because you might bow down to it, like art types of things, therefore it wasn't Aser yet, because Midrabanan wasn't sculpture. Thank you. I can't know why I couldn't figure it out. It was a hard word. I mean, it's an SAT word over there. Okay, that's number one. Number two, right, Shruffin is a general term referring to any figure in human form, not necessarily a Bodhisattva. No, and that's why. It was okay because she wasn't like talking or asking for things. No, that's awesome. That would for sure be awesome. And number three is that it wasn't even a statue. It was like bedding and cushions that were stuffed with feathers that you were able to shape into a human form. It's like one of those, you know, body pillows that you can have. Those huge body pillows. It was a massive body pillow. Something like that.
Blow up dolls that they...
Yeah, it's Kassel, not like that. Okay, remember, we're talking about Michal. And the fourth answer is that there are two types of truffle. There are some that are used for telling the future, and one is used for idolatrous practices. The one that's telling the future is not idolatrous. It could be done with Kedusha, if you know the Kadosh Shemos, the names of God that are used to be able to make it in the Kadosh way. And that's the idea behind it, and that's the idea behind this whole thing. Others say that no, it was Asur, but she made the Truppen because she knew that Shaul HaMelech was going crazy about David HaMelech, and she knew she would need it eventually. This is a mannequin made specifically for this purpose because she knew what was going to happen over here. Oh, what else was it? Okay, that is that. Shaul sent messengers to take David, but she said, he's sick. So the messengers went back to Shaul and said, he's sick. So Shaul said, go back and get him. But Liros is David, they came back to see David, bring him to me in the bed to go kill him. The messengers came, they saw that there were these statues in the bed. That's also why Truppen is also plural, statues. That's why it doesn't sound right exactly. It shouldn't be like one big statue. It's probably more like a pillow type of thing. Kvira Yisim shows him those goat things by his head. Why you trick me? You sent away my enemy, but he mullied me, was able to escape now. Now Michal was very scared for his life. Very scared for her life. Okay? She said, David HaMelech said to me, send me away, why should I kill you? That Michal said that he threatened to kill me if he didn't run away. Michal was literally afraid that Shaul was going to kill her. So put the blame on David HaMelech and said it's David HaMelech's fault. That's what ended up happening. Since Shaul hated David HaMelech anyway, what was the worst thing that was going to happen? But it got a lot worse than that. Because she said that, Shaul found an excuse to say that the kiddushin between David and Michal was not real in the first place and gave her over to another man and said, you're allowed to marry this other man. We'll see what happens. But David Baruch may mullet. David ran away and he escaped by Yavol Shmuel and Ramah. So he came to Shmuel and Ramah. Took a place to go to the Navi of the generation who just made you king. He told him everything that Shaul did. So they went by themselves. They went to the city of Nayos. He was hoping that Shmuel and Avi would have a Nebiah or Nebuah that would be able to explain what exactly you should do at this time. Nayos says that they went to the base medrash to be able to explain something. But you know what they say? You know what they darshan in this pasuk? Shmuel and Avi did not worry about anything that Shaul HaMelech was ready to do. David HaMelech took advantage of the fact that he was with Shmuel and Avi and said, let's try to understand where the base medrash is supposed to be. And they sat there studying all night long, Binayos, which refers to building something, as in Binyan, and they sat there thinking, where should be the base of Mikdash, the highest spot in Eretz Yisrael? What is the highest spot in Eretz Yisrael?
They knew that already, though.
They did not. The idea that Shaul HaMelech had was that it should be in Ramah, which is called a high spot, and was on a mountain.
What about Yaakov?
They knew that it was a holy place, and they always treated the Makom, you know, the Hara Moriah as a holy place, but they had no idea the Makom Mikdash should be there. And the reason why it was simple, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it should be a Makom that everybody goes up to. So they all thought that it was the highest mountain in Eretz Yisrael. So Shaul HaMelech said it should be in Ramah. Ramah is in Binyamin's territory, and it's the highest place in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it should be over there. And Shaul HaMelech paskened that and told it to Shmuel Navi. Shmuel Navi was masking right then. David HaMelech signed it. It's not high in physicality; it's high in spirituality. We've got to take the highest point in Ruchnius, and that is the Makom HaMikdash, which is where Yaakovinu slept, where Avraminu had the Akedah. That's the idea where it is, and they were trying to figure out exactly where it was going to be, and that was the machlokas Shaul and David HaMelech. We all know Shaul versus David. We always pass in life David HaMelech, and that's what happened over here. Unbelievable stuff. Now, why did David HaMelech have to undergo all this stuff? Why did this have to happen to David? Chazal tell us David HaMelech, in order to become a suitable king, has to go through a lot of tzaras. A king has to know that not always is it going to be easy, and it's going to be very, very, very hard to do. That's the idea. David HaMelech spent the entire night learning Torah, even though he was running away from the soldiers. Now, you got the Shaul Lamor, who was told to Shaul, saying, Hine David bin Ayos b'Ramah. He's at Nayos, in the city, or around the city of Ramah. Vayishlach Shaul Malachim, Shaul sent over messengers, Lachasa to David to go grab David. Vayarech Lahakas and Avim Nibim. And he saw, this is each one, those soldiers, they saw a band of Nevi'im that was prophesying. Shmuel Omed Mitzavaleim. Shmuel was in charge of all of them, helping them prophesy. So the messengers of Shaul, all of a sudden, they got a spirit of prophecy, but he's Nabu Gabhema. And they started speaking out words of Nebuah. They started doing everything along with them. He sent other messengers. They also started prophesying. He sent a third band of messengers. And even they, all the bands of messengers that he sent to go get David HaMelech started prophesying with the prophets. So he went to Ramah. And he went to the big pit, right by Sehu. They said, in Nayos and Ramah. He got a spirit of God. He started prophesying. Now remember, Shaul HaMelech was a very upset individual. He kept having a terrible, terrible spirit of God came upon him. He never wanted to go in the first place. But this is a big step for him. He was able to become happy. He was able to get something big. And it was the second time that Shaul HaMelech had actually been a prophet. Remember, the first time was when he first became king. That was the first time. Now he's able to do it even while he's on the way, even while he was upset, even while he was angry. That's how powerful the Nebuah was. Let's finish off the parak. Pasuk of Dalet, Vayishad Gamhu Begadav. He took off his garments. Some say he literally was still a little bit crazy. Took off his garments and sat there naked on the ground. Others say he took off his royal garments and he put on regular clothing, Nevi'im clothing. Vayisnavi Gamhu, and Shaul sat there prophesying with Shmuel in front of Shmuel. Vayipo Aram Kol Yomahu. He sat there naked all day long. If he's literally naked, then he's naked. Others say he just wasn't wearing his kingly clothing, and that made him as if he was naked. The Chol Alayla Kol Yomu V'Chol Alayla Al Kain Yomru Agam Shaul Benavim. And therefore they say the line, is Shaul still a prophet? What happened to Shaul over here? That's the idea behind it. Some say that Shaul HaMelech took off his royal garments because he was embarrassed to be around Shmuel and Avi, who had already told him that his malchus was going to be given over to somebody else. Shmuel and Avi was so powerful, he was able to make Shaul HaMelech prophesy even in his crazy state. That's the power of Shmuel HaMelech. To explain what that was exactly. Alright, it's crazy stuff. While Shaul was in this prophetic trance and doing all of his prophecies, David HaMelech was able to get out. He was able to escape and go somewhere else while Shmuel and Avi had allowed this to happen. There's a famous story with Rabbi Akiva Eger, just to end off with something crazy. Rabbi Akiva Eger was being visited by his son-in-law, Sam Sofer. While they were sitting together, the Nesivis walked in, Rabbi Yaakov Melisa. He said, oh, such a great gadol has come to visit us, we have to have a suda, sudas mitzvah. So they all sat down, and Rabbi Akiva Eger told the Nesivis to go start speaking. The Nesivis got up and started saying over his bar Torah. After he finished, he turned, Rabbi Akiva Eger turned to his son-in-law, Sam Sofer, and he said, Moshe, what do you think of the drasha? So Sam Sofer said, listen, it's good, but I have four kashas, and bombed the entire drasha. Just destroyed it completely. Nesivis felt a little bit upset. So Rabbi Akiva Eger turned to the shamish, the guy going in and out, walking in and out, serving the whole meal. And he said, what do you think of this whole machlokas? He said, well, I agree with the Nesivis, said the shamish. And here's the answer to the four kashas of the Chassam Sofer. And he answered all four kashas and brought proofs to the Nesivis. So Chassam Sofer turned to Rabbi Akiva Eger and said, it's not fair. If you wanted the walls to talk, you could have made the walls talk. What the Chassam Sofer understood is that Rabbi Akiva Eger was so powerful, he was able to project onto other people what he was thinking. And thus, because he saw the Nesivis, he might have agreed with Chassam Sofer, because he saw that the Nesivis was upset, he projected to show the Nesivis that even a Stam Shamish understood what the Nesivis was saying and giving proofs, and that the kashas of the Chassam Sofer were absolutely nothing. But the Chassam Sofer understood it immediately, and he realized that he just put his da into the Shamish again. Is that a crazy little story? That's the idea. You know what's all it over? The Rebbe Mulut Lin, the grandson of from the Chassam Sofer. Rebbe Mulut Lin said it. What's up with that?